broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans, Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby, live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for February the 18th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide, and absolutely we're convinced. The checks and balances are absolutely brilliant, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Man, have we got a lot to talk about last show. Let's see, what was that, Saturday? Yeah. So last show, we talked about news the networks refused to use for the first hour. I call it the news the networks refused to use. Liberty Roundtable Live Weekend Review. And man, we cover a lot of stories. I counted it up. We had well over 100 hot topic stories to discuss throughout the previous week. It's just amazing how much news we cover. That was hour one. Hour two, we talked about U.S. Airlines to offer, quote, new gender options for, quote, non-binary passengers, and I believe in God's edict. Male and female created he them. And I understand that other people have different views on this. I get it, but should they be forced by the airlines to state their, quote, viewpoint, political opinion against their, quote, birth certificate or now birth certificates if they're changing? Should they force my views on this too? How does all this work, folks? Understand this. At some point, there's a showdown. Either they're going to force their will on us, or we're going to stick with time-tested historical reality. Anyway, I digress. I'm just telling you, this is an epic battle that we haven't seen the end of. But I believe in God's law. I believe the Bible. What, its opening salvo even basically says, hey, male and female created he, them. Right? God's a he, and the world's a binary reality, male and female. And they're not opposing or divisionary. They're complementary. If that comes as a surprise, you're listening to the right program. If it doesn't come as a surprise, you're listening to the right program. We stand unequivocally for God, family, and country, folks, and that is not about to change. All right, Donald Trump declares national emergency over the border crisis. Good for President Trump. It's needed. However, sadly, President Donald J. Trump failing to make the proper case for the declaration of an emergency. I talked about it in very appropriate detail. Look, Nancy Pelosi is now saying a Democrat can do that too. Later, a Democrat will do this to promote gun control. Beware. Well, Sam helps Donald make the legitimate constitutional case for the President of the United States to declare a national emergency. Folks, the border wall is only part of this national security discussion, right? The biggest reason I think we ought to declare a state of emergency is because Congress literally just passed, overwhelmingly, I might clarify, an 1,100-page behemoth omnibus spending bill, 1,100 plus pages, spending $1 trillion, and no one's even read it. And the president just signed it. That's 536 elected people just signed a bill they've never read. Now, I submit to you, that is a national security crisis. President Trump should never have signed it. He should have literally stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, whoa, stop. Shame on you, little children in Congress. You know what? When you're a little kid, you're told don't sign anything that you haven't read. Especially when you turn 18, it's a rite of passage. Don't even ever sign that car loan, that home lease, that what? Don't ever sign something you haven't read. It's like 101 for an adult kind of stuff. And then now President Trump should have said, look, I'm declaring a national emergency because you 435 people have sworn an oath to defend our nation from enemies, foreign and domestic, and you have failed miserably in that sworn duty. And therefore, I'm calling a national emergency right now. I will not sign this bill. You will go back and you will be responsible and you will pass transparent legislation that your colleagues can read, that your constituents can understand and either support or reject and let their feelings be known to you as their representative. And I'm declaring a national emergency. I will keep the government open. I will fund that which is constitutional government, and I'll do it now. And furthermore, I will demand you go back and be honest with yourselves and with your constituents. The issue here is honesty. And how dare you sign a bill, 1,100 plus pages, that you don't even know what's in it. That alone is a constitutional crisis, not to mention a security crisis. It's all of the above. How do you know in there it doesn't say Vladimir Putin will be the next president of the United States of America? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a little bit demonstrating the absurd by being absurd, but I'm making a valid point. You don't know what's in it. And therefore, you don't know if you're keeping your oath of office to defend our country against enemies, foreign and domestic. You have no idea. And when it spends $1 trillion of unconstitutional fake money on top of it, this is a national security crisis. Just my two cents. But that's what Donald should have done. But sadly, it didn't happen. All right, that's a recap of the broadcast that took place on Saturday. It is still available online. If you want to hear the elongated discussion case about that second hour on Saturday, it is available on demand at libertyroundtable.com. Without further ado, news the networks refuse to use starts now. Kirk Crosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org with me as well. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's good to be with you.
All right. I want to know what you think of my explanation. Did you hear that whole thing about what I think Donald should have done about a national emergency or a declaration thereof or whatever you want to call it, a constitutional crisis discussion law?
Yeah, sure did.
What do you think?
I very much like your idea that President Trump should have vetoed that piece of legislation. No one had read too long to read through the 1,100 pages, dropped on them at the last minute. I don't know call a national emergency because of that.
Well, let me ask you a question. How do you know it doesn't install President Vladimir Putin as President of the United States of America?
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. I know that's an absurd statement, but I'm making a point. You don't know. Now, when you spend $1 trillion and sign 1,100 pages of binding writing, if you will, you can't tell me it's not a national crisis because you don't even know what you're binding to, sir.
Right. I agree it's a national crisis. I just don't agree that we should, you know, call it a state of emergency or something like that. But I think that Trump should have vetoed it. Yes, but I don't think he should have declared, you know, a national state of emergency. We've got 30 of those already declared since.
What's a bigger national emergency, the border wall or the fact that we had 535, in my opinion, enemies of the Republic? And by the way, there's not 535 that signed it, so it's not really 535, but I'm making a point that literally said, hey, Donald, we don't care what's in it. We're spending $1 trillion. And you know what? How are you keeping your oaths of office when 535 people send something to the President of the United States as a body? Now, the reason that I'm criticizing those who even said no is because I don't hear them trying to come on my show to make their case against it at all. So at some point you say, can you swear an oath to the supreme law of the land and then spend $1 trillion of unconstitutional money and sign a bill that's 1,100 plus pages and you don't even know what's in it? Can you keep your oath under that condition?
Mm-hmm. No way.
And when 535 people don't keep their oaths, is that a crisis?
It certainly is of sorts, yes.
All right. Anyway, my goal isn't to convince you and prove you wrong. My goal is to, in my opinion, highlight my understanding, though. These people have broken their oath, every one of them. Now, the ones that went against it, I commend them, but I don't hear them really trying to speak out boldly, nobly, independent. I don't find a single story really in opposition except for their silent no vote.
Uh-huh.
That, to me, is a problem.
Yeah, huge problem, no question.
All right, Kurt, you want to add to that real quick?
Well, I was just thinking about how it would sure be interesting if some news piece said something like Congress, approves bill turning over the United States, every state of the union to the Soviet Union or, you know, some or to China or something like that. And then somebody would say, what, that's not in there. And then you'd, you know, basically just respond and say, well, nobody knows what's in there, do they?
Well, and that highlights the point that I'm trying to make. Now, I'm not saying those things are there. I don't even know what's there. I'm not suggesting that I do. But nobody else does either, including the President of the United States, who swore an oath to defend our country from enemies, foreign and domestic, and who is the commander-in-chief of the, quote, free world, if you will. And you got 500 and what, 36 people that literally went along with this. Even the ones that said no, I submit, are going along with it, because I don't believe anybody's highlighting the point that I'm making. Really? Not publicly. Nobody. I'll troll Rand Paul's Twitter account to see what he's saying about it right now really quick. But anyway, I just think this is something that cannot be overlooked. I think it's a security crisis of epic proportion.
You know, Sam, I heard a number of reports, I think it was Saturday, after the signing, that basically said stuff like, well, the president got this or that thing removed out of there, these poison pills or whatever. We don't really know, because like you say, nobody could really read it. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if we had the one page, one item at a time act, you know?
All right. I commend Rand Paul. He's speaking out as bold as I am. I'm looking at his Twitter feed right now, and one of the headlines he has right now: I'm disappointed with both the massive, bloated, secret bill that just passed. Anyway, under this, quote, emergency to build the wall, he's speaking out as bold as I am. Good for Rand Paul. Sam Curtin Lowell back in seconds. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Kurt Crosby, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org on your radio. So Rand Paul speaking out pretty bold. Senator Rand Paul says via Twitter, I'm disappointed with both the massive, bloated, secret bill that just passed and with the president's intention to declare an emergency to build the wall. Now, I personally think the problem with what the president's doing right now is he's going, it's an emergency. I'm going to take the money from here and there and there and there in executive action. Then president asked about it, and he's like, I could build the wall really slowly, but I wanted to speed it up. That's not a good reason to declare a national emergency, ladies and gentlemen. Not a good reason at all. And so then Rand Paul continues to talk about, hey, we got to be very careful with executive power. And boy, howdy, is he right about that. However, if we're not very careful, and if we don't declare a national emergency about something at some point, and try to heighten the concern and the reality. At some point, they're just going to back into a con-con, and the Congress will declare its own, quote, emergency by calling a halt to the con game. So we need to do something drastic for sure. And I think the president highlighting the spending of $1 trillion of unconstitutional money, the spending of $22 trillion that we're in debt right now, and this idea that we're going to have 535 members of Congress, literally with a few exceptions, backing this idea that we can sign an 1,100-page bill, not even know what's in it, and somehow keep our oath. That alone is of serious, serious consequence and concern, to say the least. All right, anyway, good for Rand Paul, and there's a few others standing up. I got to give them credit, too. There's just not very many, and I don't see them boldly standing up. The boldest one by far is Rand Paul, and good for him. All right, speaking of that, the president...
Well, there's one other we should mention, too, Sam, and that's Justin Amash. Here's his tweet on the subject. He says this: I don't support this giant spending bill with or without the wall and with or without the immigration provision. That was his tweet there, Sam.
And see, I appreciate their Twitter feeds, and that's great. They're bold. But you know what? I think they need to be making the talk circuits, though. They need to be standing up together. We need to have a press conference about this. We need to see how many really are in our camp on this stuff. And whether we agree we need to declare a national emergency or not, I agree with you that there's too many of those done. But at some point, if we don't highlight this enough and stop the spending of money or reduce this or highlight it or do something to hopefully get the American people to understand the situation we're in, eventually Congress will just declare a con-con. And I'd rather see a national emergency highlighting these issues by the president than I would to see a con-con. And at some point, though, something's going to bust loose and something's going to happen, lol.
Yeah, we don't want that. He also tweeted further on down here. It says, this massive, wasteful spending bill stuffed with unrelated items passed 2017 to 185, he wrote. It's amazing how some...
All right, passed what again?
217. Yeah.
Got it.
217 to 185. It's amazing, he says, how some wall funding causes my fellow Republicans to embrace big government. End of quote.
Yeah, and that's why I say this isn't even about the wall. National security is at stake here. But immigration is only a teeny part of that. I submit to you and Rand Paul pointed to this point too, the unbridled willingness just to spend ourselves into oblivion is going to have serious, serious security repercussions as well. Now, yeah. Ron Paul, well, let's just talk about what happened in Congress last week first, okay?
Yeah, it was a bad week for liberty, Sam. It was bad because of at least two decisions was made. Number one, they did confirm William Barr for Attorney General on a vote of 54-45. Rand Paul, standing alone again, was the only Republican to vote against Barr's confirmation. So here is his statement.
And by the way, I got to give the Democrats a little bit of kudos. You know what? They voted against him, several of them as well. They might have done it for the wrong reasons. Don't know, don't care. The fact is they voted no with Rand, and there's 45, including Rand, that voted no. And you got to give them credit, even though they might not have had the right reasons, they did the right thing, sir.
That's exactly right, Sam. And so here's what Rand says. He says, I am unable to support Bill Barr's nomination to be the next Attorney General. While I support President Trump and have supported most of his nominees, I have too many concerns about the record and the views of this nominee. Bill Barr was a leading proponent of warrantless surveillance, and his overall record on the Fourth Amendment is troubling to me. I remain concerned that Bill Barr does not agree with our bipartisan efforts to reform our criminal justice system. Finally, Bill Barr has a troubling record on the Second Amendment. For these reasons, I voted today against his nomination for Attorney General. End of quote. And so, William Barr is bad, particularly on the Second Amendment. He's supportive of these red flag laws by which you can lose your right to possess a weapon. And, I mean, this is like no due process. It's take your guns before due process. I mean, this is all bad stuff. And now we have top cop here in the U.S. going to be somebody who supports these kinds of laws. It's a bad deal, Sam.
Amen to that. Amen to that. All right, but let's talk about what else in Congress. Anything else happened last week?
Yeah, the U.S. House did something good. They voted on HJ Resolution 37. This is House Joint Resolution 37, which invokes the War Powers Act to end U.S. military involvement in the Saudi-led war on Yemen. Specifically, this joint resolution directs the president to remove U.S. armed forces from hostilities in or affecting Yemen within 30 days, and it prohibits activities including in-flight fueling for non-U.S. aircraft conducting missions as part of the conflict in Yemen. Now, interestingly, Sam, this passed the House 248-177, and Ben McAdams, Mr. Democrat from here in Utah, he voted for this resolution. That was the correct vote. He cast the correct vote, while Bishop Curtis and Stewart, all three Republicans from Utah in the U.S. House, all voted against it, which was the incorrect vote. Sam?
And that's disappointing, because this seems so fundamental to me, Lowell. Why are we the biggest arms dealer in the world? Why do we fund and arm and train, quote, what do you want to call it, torn nation after torn nation after torn nation? Why do we back socialists against communists, communists against fascists, fascists against, I mean, it seems like we always pick a side, and we always pick, I don't know, the lesser of two evils that comes out to be the bigger of two evils tomorrow. I mean, it seems like we've had this foreign intervention policy for decades that has just absolutely ran off the rails. Now, there's a couple of columns that talk about this in specific that I think we ought to talk about. Ron Paul wrote one. Pat Buchanan wrote the other, sir.
Absolutely right, Sam. They're spot on. In fact, it was Ron Paul during the 2007 campaign for president that raised this issue in the minds of American voters. You know, he talked about the 1953, we'll get to that, I guess, the 1953 overthrow.
Yeah, but talk about that first, and I know you had that later in your notes, but you know what, that kind of precedes the whole reason that we're where we are, right?
Yeah, it does. Let's hit that right now. In 1953, this is when the CIA secretly initiated a regime change coup in Iran.
And by the way, fast forward right now, we're talking about doing the same thing in Venezuela, but this time publicly and asking Americans to blatantly pick sides. We used to do war kind of in secret. Now we're blatant war hawks. Okay?
Yeah.
We've come a long way, baby, in the wrong direction, but it's eerily similar, right?
It is. So very similar. I mean, you just turn back to 1953, look at that playbook, and then look at the Venezuela playbook. They look eerily similar. And we're going to bring down our fists on Venezuela, just like we did on Iran in 1953, and it's a bad deal. So what happened in 53? Well, the U.S. did this regime change coup, basically, and ousted the prime minister. He was a democratically elected prime minister of the country, Mohammad Mossadegh, right? Everybody remembers that name, Mossadegh. He's the good guy, well, the relatively good guy, who was ousted in 1953, because the CIA got involved and instigated that coup. And so then what happened? Well, we put in the Shah of Iran. He was our puppet dictator in Iran, and he's a terrible bad dude. He turned out to be one of the most cruel, one of the most brutal tyrants in the world, with the full support of the CIA and the rest of the U.S. national security establishment. He had a tyrannical enforcement agency called the SAVAK, S-A-V-A-K, SAVAK, which was basically a combination of the Gestapo, the KGB, the Pentagon, the NSA, and the CIA, all wrapped into one.
Imagine something like that, ladies and gentlemen. Outright, blatant separation of powers, violation on steroids.
They ruled with a brutal iron fist, indefinite detention, Sam. Brutal torture, kangaroo trials, and executions. These were the hallmarks of the Shah's regime.
And as Kurt Cosby would say, other than that, it's not so bad. All right, hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. Sam, Kurt, and Lowell are going to break this down. I'm telling you right now, Lowell Nelson is absolutely on fire, standing for the supreme law of our land and peace, not war. This is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump wants America's European allies to take in and try hundreds of ISIS fighters captured in Syria, saying the U.S., quote, will be forced to release the terrorists in Europe if Britain, France, Germany, and other allies don't accept more than 800 ISIS fighters. Former Deputy Director of the FBI, Andrew McCabe, insists that he had a one-on-one conversation with then-Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, and that Rosenstein did offer to wear a wire and secretly record President Trump.
We talked about why the president had insisted on firing the director and whether or not he was thinking about the Russia investigation and did that impact his decision. And in the context of that conversation, the deputy Attorney General offered to wear a wire into the White House.
Rosenstein denies it, and this is USA Radio News.
Ask yourself, if you built a van for your business, where would you start? At the beginning, of course, with the people who invented the work van over 100 years ago, Mercedes-Benz. You'd give your new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter advanced technology and safety to keep you connected and protected. You'd make it available in diesel and gas, and there would be thousands of configurations and upfits to choose from. You build it right here in the USA, because your one-of-a-kind business deserves nothing less than a van that's built for you. Introducing the all-new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, the safest, most innovative Sprinter yet, starting at just $33,790. Built for you, the all-new Sprinter, built in the USA. Mercedes-Benz, vans, born to run.
MSRP excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Options, model availability, and actual dealer price may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Equipment described as optional. 2019 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter available soon.
Former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld is defending his primary election challenge to President Trump, telling ABC's This Week he'll pursue a 2020 Republican primary challenge because he says it's in the country's best interest that Trump face a challenge and hopefully not be reelected. Weld announcing his decision in New Hampshire on Friday. Former New York Congressman Anthony Weiner is out of prison. The Federal Bureau of Prisons reporting the 54-year-old Weiner has been transferred out of the Federal Medical Center in Devens, Massachusetts, after serving most of his 21-month sentence for sexting a 15-year-old North Carolina girl in 2017. A Florida sixth grader is facing misdemeanor charges after he said he wouldn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. The 11-year-old boy accused of telling a teacher he wouldn't stand for it because he thinks the American flag is racist. And this is USA Radio News.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, Lowell Nelson, ladies and gentlemen, on a roll. We're talking about two incredible columns, and we're talking about congressional action. Congress did the right thing. It's not near enough, but it is a start, Lowell.
You're exactly right, Sam. They passed, the U.S. House passed a resolution pursuant to the War Powers Act saying to the president, you've got 30 days to get out of Yemen, to get out of supporting this Saudi-led war, a genocide of the Yemeni people. And, of course, the U.S. Senate passed a similar measure last year, which died in the House. Paul Ryan went to great lengths to stop it from even being heard in the House. Well, the House has passed the first one this year. Now the U.S. Senate will consider a similar measure, and then it will go to Trump's desk. Now, Trump said he'd veto that thing because he's in cahoots with the Saudis, but we still need to take the action that, you know, the Senate has to vote on it, hopefully, and then get it to the president. He hasn't vetoed a single thing yet. So why would he about to start now, right? So let's put it on his desk, and let's get out of this war in Yemen. Let's stop this brutal killing of the people of Yemen. So that's a good thing, Sam.
And the headline of Ron Paul's column really, in my opinion, highlights the, I don't know what you say. I don't know if you call this ironic or the sad state of affairs, or I'm not sure how to frame this, but listen to the headline.
Well, okay, the headline is, president starts a war and Congress yawns. Threatens to end one? Condemnation. That was the headline of his column.
Yeah, and I don't even know how to respond to that, but I mean, doesn't that really tell the whole story? That's an incredibly written, just full of reality checks headline. Kurt, what do you think of that headline? Listen, Ron Paul. President starts a war. Congress, and it might say Congress and the people yawn. Or the people cheer. Congress yawns, the people cheer. Congress, or president ends one, and condemnation everywhere that he's going to just put America at risk. But yet I say we ought to declare a national emergency because we're spinning ourselves into an oblivion and we don't even know what we're signing. And people say, oh, no, Sam, you got to be really careful, you know. I'm going, what? What do you say to that, Kurt?
Well, one of the things I'll say is that, at least in my opinion, what's going on, though, is the he who owns the media makes the rules point once again, Sam, because what you've got is most Americans are probably unaware of what's really been going on in Yemen. Most, if you had to label, hey, how many countries are we at war? Most of them don't even know. Then they have little idea that, you know, we're doing these things simply because the standard media wants to support the military-industrial complex. They get lots of money from those guys, and they certainly don't want to call a halt to that, do they?
Lol, I think Kurt's spot on this one.
Yeah, I totally agree, Sam. You know, senators are even going so far as to claim the U.S. troops cannot leave the Middle East until every last ISIS fighter is killed or captured. Well, this is obviously a false argument, right? Dr. Paul, he says Al-Qaeda and ISIS did not emerge in Iraq because U.S. troops left the country. They emerged because the U.S. was in the country in the first place.
By the way, where did we get authorization to be in the country, not only from the sovereign nation that we're talking about here, but from our own checks and balances? Where did the authorization and the spending come from? Okay, there's a lot of questions that Ron Paul and others are asking. For example, Ron Paul asks this in this incredible column. Why is Congress so quick to anger when the president finally seeks to end the longest U.S. war in history? This is something that we really need to highlight in the media, to Kurt's point. People would get it, lol, if we talked about it enough and explained it to them enough.
Well, and that's why I appreciate the Liberty Roundtable so much, because we do bring these things to light. And people who listen to you, Sam and Kurt, they get this information. They get this news. We just need more people listening and raising a chorus of dissent. And so I'm saying every time you contact either of your two senators or your representative in the House, tell them, end the wars. Bring the troops home. Let them embrace a non-interventionist foreign policy. You know, if we said that every single time we contacted them, they might start to get the message. Enough.
I agree, but I've seen a lot of change since I've been in this game. I've been on the radio for over 25 years, so I'm not new to this game. And when we first started, you could call your congressmen and senators and get a hold of their staffs pretty easy and talk to somebody, and they would actually have a long conversation with you, and they would at least write down your comments and pass them along and these kind of things. Now you call up, and most times you don't get a live person at the Capitol. You get a voicemail or a voice system. Then you have to press and all the buttons and get to your representative, and then it usually, 9 times out of 10 these days, is just a voicemail. And so they've really done their very best to shield themselves from what we the people think, lol.
Yeah, I want to ask you a question, Sam. I went back and watched Rambo 3 a few weeks ago. Do you happen to remember what the story of this movie is?
I don't. Do you, Kurt? As a blind person, I don't do too well with action flicks, so I don't watch a lot of them.
That's not First Blood. Was that? Anyway, I know there's Rambo 1, Rambo 2, Rambo 3, but I need a little refresher, lol.
Yeah, now, so Rambo 3 was where he mounts this mission to rescue his friend Colonel Troutman from the clutches of the formidable invading Soviet forces in Afghanistan. So this is set in Afghanistan. Essentially, Sylvester Stallone helps a group of Afghanis free themselves from an oppressive Soviet occupation force. Well, more importantly, you know, and it's all exciting action, right? And then, but the very end of the movie, Sam, there is a dedicatory message that's displayed just before the credits begin to roll, and here's what it says. It says, this film is dedicated to the gallant people of Afghanistan. that's the dedicatory message of that message of that movie. That movie was made. It came out in 1988. Well, remember that the Soviet occupation went from 79 to 89. This movie came out just at the end of the Soviet occupation there in Afghanistan, and it lauded the Afghan people for resisting Soviet occupation forces. And then what did the U.S. do in December of 2001, just about 10, 12 years later? The U.S. joined coalition forces, entered Afghanistan, and began occupying territory there to fight the Taliban, who are now the bad guys, when in reality they were the gallant people of Afghanistan just 12 years earlier, Sam. To me, that is super ironic.
It's criminal, to say the least, but we don't seem to be articulating the reality of the situation. Not only does Ron Paul write an incredible column, but I submit Pat Buchanan's not a whit behind him.
Oh, great column here, Sam. The great thing about Ron, or Pat's column, is that he talks about the five or six wars into which the U.S. has plunged without congressional authorization. He quotes the headlines from the Washington Post of 2011. He says, the headline said, Assad must go, Obama says. That was the headline. And then the story in the Washington Post quoted Obama as follows, the future of Syria must be determined by its people. But President Bashar al-Assad is standing in their way. The time has come for President Assad to step aside, end of quote, right? I mean, that's what the WAPO said in 2011. Well, joining U.S. President Obama was Nicolas Sarkozy of France, David Cameron of the U.K., and others. Well, 7 years, and this is what Pat Buchanan writes, he says 7 years and 500,000 dead Syrians later, it is Obama, Sarkozy, and Cameron who are gone, and Assad still rules in Damascus, and the 2,000 Americans in Syria are coming home soon, says President Donald Trump. Well, Senator Lindsey Graham saying the U.S. cannot leave now or the Kurds are going to get slaughtered. So Buchanan then asks the question, who plunged us into the Syrian war?
Hold on. Pay attention to this question in detail, folks. This, in my opinion, is a fundamental reality check on the interventionist policy we seem to embrace without even questioning it, right? Listen to the question from Pat Buchanan. Go ahead, Lowell.
Who plunged us into a Syrian civil war and so managed our intervention that were we to go home after 7 years, our enemies will be victorious and our allies will get slaughtered? That is the question, Sam.
And what's fascinating about the question in my mind is they're using this as a way to try to say we got to stay there. What they're really doing is betraying their reasons for going there in the first place. How much money have we spent over the last 7 years? What have we done if we haven't stopped the enemy in the last 7 years? How would they be strong enough after 7 years to still declare a victory if we were to back out? At some point, it just in the attempt to stay there and defend or supposedly justify our efforts, they betray the reality right on the spot without even understanding what they've done.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's just Syria. Buchanan then turns his attention to Afghanistan, where 17 years ago we invaded and occupied in order to oust the Taliban. Wow.
And we're in over 130 nations, militarily speaking, currently, ladies and gentlemen. Lowell Nelson, back in seconds on your radio.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S. 205-672-2000. 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our guest, Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, on a roll, talking about Ron Paul's incredible column and Pat Buchanan's incredible column. Ron Paul, quote, "President starts a war and Congress yawns, threatens to end one, condemnation big time." The question is, why is Congress so quick to anger when the president finally seeks to end the longest war in U.S. history? You would think would be a plotting piece, wouldn't we? Pat Buchanan, not one whit behind Ron Paul. How the war party lost the Middle East with incredible questions of his own. Who plunged us into a Syrian civil war and so managed our intervention that were we to go home after 7 years, our enemies will be victorious and our allies will be slaughtered? What on earth is going on around here? But we're in over 130 nations, militarily speaking. But again, it all goes back to this 1953 secret intervention that started out. We got involved in toppling dictators. We've been at it ever since. We literally take one dictator down, put another, quote, friendly dictator in place. But you know what? You got to ask another question. How do we understand why Iranians are so mad at us? Why they hate us? Why are they bashing the United States government and that 1953 secret effort, and going forward, might give a clue, Lowell.
Well, it sure does, Sam. It gives us a clue because they, after we installed our sock puppet dictator, the Shah, in 1953, he ruled with an iron hand, an iron fist, basically. And you know, it was typical of that regime to indefinite detention, brutal torture, kangaroo trials, executions. These were hallmarks of the Shah's regime. Well, the U.S. never, you know, publicized that, what kind of regime he was running. They just were glad that he was their sock puppet dictator over there and doing what, you know, we wanted done. And so in 1979, the Iranian people rose up in revolt, and they overthrew the Shah, much to the CIA's chagrin. And the U.S. administration did not like that, but the Iranians have been ruled ever since then, you know, and, you know, by a series of dictators, basically a theocracy. But they hate the fact that the U.S. is still imposing sanctions on the Iranian people because the U.S. is so upset with that they don't have a sock puppet over there anymore. And that is why the people of Iran, they hate the U.S. government. They hate our interventionist policy, as do I. The Iranian people, however, love the American people. We have an Iranian right here in Highland. Wonderful man, wonderful family, and he loves the American people. But just like me, does not like our interventionist government. And so that is why...
Could you imagine if that got out of the media and people understood the truth on that one? Just think what a game changer that could be, Lowell.
Oh, man, it would be awesome to have him on the radio sometime, Sam. He is amazing, and he is like thousands of others, hundreds of thousands.
Well, my response on that is you set it up, we'll knock him down, sir, we're ready.
Okay. They love the American people, and in fact, but, Sam, I love the Iranian people. It's these governments, these political gangsters that get the two nations into trouble because they're the ones chomping at the bit for war. And they do it because they want resources, Sam. They want the oil. They want the natural resources. and they're willing to take our men and women, spill their blood in order to gain these resources in this turf, this territory, for their own self.
And they also want to destroy the greatest country on the face of the earth that believes in God, family, and country and protects life, liberty, and property. And they're striking at the very heart of our supreme law. Whether it be spending us into oblivion with a $1 trillion spending bill, 1,100 pages that nobody's signed. No one but me thinks that's even national emergency worthy, you know? 435 members of the House, 100 members of the Senate literally swear an oath and then basically turned a blind eye to that oath when they sign without even knowing what they're signing and spend $1 trillion of fake money. And people are like, oh, that's not really an emergency, Sam. That's done all the time. Where have we come in America today? But nevertheless, in Utah and other places, they realize the threat. And whether whether the president declares an emergency or not, whether we highlight this concern or not, Congress is, the states are. You got SJR 9 in Utah. It's an application for an Article 5, an Article 5 convention, Lowell.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, Sam. It is going to be voted on in the Utah Senate this week, probably Wednesday or Thursday. Based on its position right now on the second reading calendar, it's sitting at position 35. And they go 10, 15 positions every day. And they've got floor time tomorrow. They've got floor time Wednesday. They got floor time twice on Thursday. And so basically, when they have floor time, it's two more hours of, you know, processing these requests. Well, sitting at position 35 is this joint resolution calling for a convention to amend the U.S. Constitution. We need to knock this down, folks. It is a terrible idea to call a convention. The problem with U.S. government back in Washington, D.C., is that they refuse to obey the Constitution. They refuse to adhere to it, right? And so this effort nationwide now, it's not just in Utah, but it's probably in your state too, is the push for a constitutional convention is being sought after as the answer to the problem. You know, they want to change the Constitution, the divinely inspired document, in order to address a problem with our people in Congress who, you know, they refuse to obey the Constitution. So I just don't understand it, Sam. It makes no sense to change the Constitution when the problem is a failure to obey it.
Well, it does if your goal is to destroy the Constitution, sir. If your goal is to preserve it, then it makes no sense. But if your goal is to destroy it and to circumvent it and to run round and round, whatever you want to call it, then it makes complete sense, sir.
I guess so, Sam. You know, the fiscal restraints, this particular joint resolution calls for three things. They want to impose fiscal restraints on the federal government.
By the way, if the president declared a national emergency and shut down the Federal Reserve tomorrow, then we wouldn't have that crisis.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And by the way, it would be constitutional for him to shut down dishonest money, would it not? And when we have dishonest money at the helm violating the supreme law, and we've done so for 100 years, at some point it is an emergency, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially when we spend in the one single stroke of a pen $1 trillion. And we don't even know what we spend it on, do we?
No.
Okay, I'm telling you that is an emergency, and it needs to be stopped, and Donald should just simply declare an emergency and stop the Federal Reserve now and say we're going back to honest money, people.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Totally awesome. This joint resolution talks about fiscal restraints. It also wants to limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and it also wants to limit the terms of office for its officials and for the members of Congress.
Well, can I disagree with that? We already have terms for them.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And it could be limited if we would actually vote them out.
Well, that's for sure true. You know, term limits is really just basically extending the lame duck session. Right now, if you lose an election in November, you've got 1 month of lame duck, you know, left in you. In fact, there's been some talk, it'd be a good idea, really, not to have any business after the election's over so you don't have any lame ducks.
Well, and they already take enough days off where that would be easy to do. But what they do is they take days off when they're all elected. When it's lame duck, they seem to spend every day selling us down the river.
Yeah, because lame ducks, they have no natural incentive to listen to their constituents, right? There's no possibility for them to be reelected, and so there's no natural incentive to listen to your constituents, and so they don't. there's a lot of bad stuff happens during lame duck sessions. And
the bottom line is we can't solve the world by 3 o'clock, but we can do some things. And we got to rein in our members of Congress. I don't believe a con is the answer. I think the president should declare a national emergency. And you would say, Sam, that's bad news, too. The president shouldn't just exercise muscle like that. Look, when we're spending unconstitutional money like drunken sailors, at some point it's a national emergency. When Congress is literally signing bills, they have no idea what they're even agreeing to. It is a national emergency. No one can really convince me otherwise. If it's not an emergency, what would be a greater emergency? An invasion? What would be a greater emergency than literally spending $1 trillion that we don't have on a fake money system that destroys the whole economy of the country in a situation where everybody literally almost breaks their oath of office by signing bills they have no knowledge about? The only way we can deal with it short of that on the local level is nullification, Lol.
Well, you're exactly right, Sam, because nullification allows the state or local officials basically to stop the overreaching edicts of the general government. We saw this... We saw this with the use of medical cannabis just over the past 10, 15 years. Now, you may not agree with the use of medical cannabis, but this is a prime example of states standing up and saying, look, this federal prohibition on medical cannabis, we're not recognizing. Here in our state, we're going to allow it. And yes, there were some arrests early on, but for the most part now, the feds are hands off. They don't go and arrest people in these states where medical cannabis has been declared legal.
Well, and we're humble enough to use a case that we may not even agree with as the solution, as the point being made, though. They claim that nullification has no merit, but now they've proven that's false. Not only have they proven that it has merit, but they've proven that states can and do have the authority to get it done.
Well, that's right. Even at the National Governors Association in 2013, they wrote this letter during the 2013 federal government shutdown. They said, quote, states are partners with the federal government in implementing most federal programs, end of quote. So the feds depend on the state and local resources to do their stuff. And so when state and local officials refuse to cooperate, it makes it difficult, if not impossible, for the federal government to run its programs or to enforce its laws in that state. And that's how you nullify federal edicts in your state.
If enough states are going to call a con, would that be a national emergency?
Yep, I reckon so, man.
Okay, so we've got so many things on the brink of national emergency that I don't know which one's the worst one. Is a con worse than the Federal Reserve?
I think so. You know, I really do. And see, that's the problem. We have not used the tool of nullification enough. Had the states been using nullification for the past 50 years, 100 years, we wouldn't even be talking about a con today, Sam.
Amen to that. You're right. But the checks and balances are falling apart, and that's the crisis. One thing that's interesting, we ought to bring people behind the scenes a little bit without naming names. I've been in an email chain with a bunch of actually Utah legislative people, and I've literally said we don't want an Article 5 convention. And they literally have come back and said, well, you don't want to obey the Constitution, then how come, Sam? And I basically clearly said, look, I don't believe that we ought to go to a con. I don't believe that we ought to go to... seceding from the Union. I think those are nuclear options, and I think there's a better plan, Lowell. Go ahead.
Well, absolutely, Sam. Our history, we were born and bred on nullification all the way back when the colonies, for 200 years almost, would simply refuse to obey the laws of Parliament. So nullification is in our political DNA, Sam. We just need more of it. And that will keep the Union together. We won't have to do a con. Because states will be nullifying overreach.
And the only way for them to do that is to get off the government dole. And the only way to do that is to go back to honest money. All right, thanks for being alongside for the ride. Sam Bushman, Kirk Crosby, Lowell Nelson, thank you so much. Incredible hour. We declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore our grand old republic. But you got to get involved. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.